From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Francisco? Border of Venus.
San Jose.
Coming up, we're reflecting on the big one to help us prepare for the next one.
1906, you had 700,000 people in Northern California. Now you have 7.5 million.
The Bay Area has changed, but has our readiness for a natural disaster kept pace?
Look at Katrina. Look at New Orleans, folks. The cavalry is not coming to get you. Forget about 72 hours. You got to be ready for 2 or 3 weeks.
The region we live in is prone to earthquakes, and we don't know where or when it will hit. Today, we're going to help you get ready. This is a special presentation from KALW News, originally made for the Big One Centennial. It's the audio documentary, A Practical Guide to Disaster, coming up on Cross Currents. We're nearing a San Francisco-specific holiday. The anniversary of the big one is Friday, April 18th. On that day in 1906, a huge earthquake and fire devastated the city. The Bay Area hasn't experienced anything like that 7.8 magnitude trembler since, but we're all expecting it. The question is, are we prepared? Today we're rebroadcasting an audio documentary that initially aired on the centennial of the big one. It's an original production from KALW News called A Practical Guide to Disaster. Hold on tight. Here we go. The night of April 17th, 1906, the city of San Francisco blazed in all of its cultural glory. The Mission Opera House hosted the world's greatest tenor, Enrico Caruso, performing in Bizet's Carmen. Across town, gamblers and call girls played deep into the night in a district called the Barbary Coast. Just over half a century removed from the gold rush that put the city on the map, San Francisco was the rough-hewn jewel of America's Pacific coast.
Let me paint for you the imperial city of San Francisco, part Paris, part Dodge City.
Journalist James D'Alessandro recalls the Bay Town in his historical novel, 1906.
Literate and boorish, libertine and feudal, a soiled Mecca.
It was a very dense community. Lots of buildings, lots of tall buildings.
Karen Brewer is a curator at the Palace of the Legion of Honor.
It was a vibrant retail center, we know, right around Union Square, and there was a financial district. How heavily built up 1906 San Francisco was.
This is, while a relatively small city compared with many, this is a world metropolis. We have all the attributes of a Paris or a Rome or a London, New York.
That's Robert Falk, a San Francisco denizen of the time. He, along with John Cahill and Charles R. Timby, lived in the city. Their memories were recorded in the 1960s.
We had the same feeling, I suspect, of San Francisco that you have. Whatever that is, we condone what we don't like, but still we love the old town.
So there they are, the night of April 17th, 1906. The end of a day like any other day 100 years ago in San Francisco.
And I went to bed, and the next morning the terrible earthquake came.
On April 18th, 1906 at 5:13 a.m., a moment etched in the memories of all who survived.
And the building I was in jumped off its foundation and wheeled around a bit. When I got up out of bed to open the door, my door was jammed.
Well, I got a terrific shake. So I got out of bed very quickly.
And I hollered to this fellow, I heard him in the hall, push the door in. He said, I can't. If I do that, I'll push the building down.
On the Barbary Coast, chandeliers buckled, tables overturned, and gamblers were hurled from their seats. In Chinatown, terrified occupants clung to their airborne beds as the flimsy tenements burst at their mortared seams, pitched everything and everyone into the streets.
During this time, all my clock, odds and ends were on the mantel, were falling down on the floor. Well, I went over to the window and looked down into Curry Street there. Ladies were in their old-fashioned nightgowns. The men were out there, in their underwear. That's the way they slept, I guess, and they were very, very much excited.
The palace hotel with 1,200 sleeping guests swayed in an enormous circle, grinding and wrenching against its steel bracing. Enrico Caruso woke to the sound of tinkling chandeliers and a sensation of his bed hopping about the room. Along regal Van Ness Avenue, cobblestones resembled popping corn, and the hills undulated like blankets being shaken out by unseen hands.
Many of them fled with literally the shirts on their backs, and so the need for clothing was one of the immediate ones.
And we proceeded to drag those trunks up Gary Street, then up to, I think it was Post to Franklin. We thought we were well out of it. That's where we spent the night, sitting on our trunks. Picked up some blankets, and we used those during the night. And believe me, that was a long, long night.
The earthquake caused tremendous damage, but it was the subsequent fires that destroyed large portions of the city and left thousands homeless.
The place that I lived was burned down. That afternoon, we were ordered by the police or the military to get out. And the fire had crossed Market Street and was headed up our way.
There's complete devastation all around, but people are gathered in clusters observing the fire as it moves up the hill.
Well, we're standing around watching the fire like the other people.
In 1906, parks and squares were turned into refugee camps and refugee centers.
The city of San Francisco is no more. The Paris of the Pacific, the wealthiest and wickedest of American cities, is now ash and memories.
I remember those nights there, wrapped up in a blanket, sitting on a curb. We had nothing to eat during these days.
And all of these people had to be evacuated from the area, and many of them were not able to return to their homes.
The night of the earthquake, I'd lost everything I had, my home. The little bank that had my money in it was in ashes. I lost my job and everything.
You're listening to the audio documentary, A Practical Guide to Disaster. It originally aired on the centennial of the Big One, the great earthquake and fire that destroyed San Francisco in 1906. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is a special presentation from KALW News.
San Francisco was terribly unprepared in 1906.
Historian James D'Alessandro.
They had been warned. There were a lot of warnings. The fire chief, Dennis Sullivan, he wanted to build this massive supplemental fire suppression system. He wanted to buy fireboats. He wanted to ring San Francisco Bay with steam pumpers. He wanted to build these massive tanks on top of the city's hills to create a gravity-fed supplemental hydrant system so his men would always have water.
But Sullivan's vision was expensive, and it had not been implemented when the earthquake struck San Francisco. A tragic irony followed.
The first victim pulled from the rubble on the morning of April the 18th was the fire chief, Dennis Sullivan. A chimney cut his station in half on Bush Street near the entrance to Chinatown, and Sullivan remained in a coma for the next 3.5 days.
While San Francisco burned, Sullivan died the day after the final flames were put out.
Those who refuse to learn the lessons of history are condemned to repeat them. And we are currently condemned to repeat those mistakes.
In 2001, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, named the top three likeliest, most catastrophic disasters facing this country. They included a terrorist attack on New York City, a hurricane striking the city of New Orleans, and a major earthquake in the San Francisco Bay Area. After the World Trade Center fell on September 11, 2001, the United States reorganized domestic security and is still questioning its ability to respond in a future disaster. When Hurricane Katrina destroyed the levees surrounding New Orleans, the city flooded, creating a ghost town of rotting homes, abandoned residents, and unreserved anger, asking, why were we not prepared? Two of FEMA's catastrophic scenarios down, one to go.
There is a 62% chance of a major event being an earthquake of an 8.0 or higher magnitude within the next 30 years.
John Quinlan is Emergency Services Director with the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office.
So are we prepared for that 62% probability that we will have this major event? We don't know when it could hit. It could hit tomorrow. It could hit 10 years from now. It could hit 5 years from now. The fact of the matter is we have to be prepared now because we'll never be able to tell when it's going to come, or we can never stop an earthquake.
People must realize that they have to become their first responder.
Harris Bostic II directs the American Red Cross program, Prepare Bay Area.
They have to be self-reliant and self-sufficient if there is ever a disaster here, and may have to do that for 72 hours or more.
That is a hard lesson learned in the aftermath of Katrina. The various agencies that will work to manage an uncontrollable situation, for a variety of reasons, may not function so well. And that means people need to be prepared, wherever they are.
9 Park, Rainfort, Pittsburgh Bay Point, in 1 minute.
Every weekday, more than 300,000 people ride BART's commuter trains. Officials conduct major emergency drills annually, inviting fire departments to train in conjunction with BART's own first responders. Still, an emergency scenario could shut the trains down, resulting in gridlock for those dependent on the system until tunnels and bridges can be inspected. So, are BART riders ready for disaster?
My name is Harold Charnes. I live in San Francisco. I'm a computer professional, and, I just think of preparedness as a common part of life these days. I keep a box of food and clothing, and I used to have money, but sort of it dissolved, and I keep it outside in my chicken coop, so I think it's going to be available if the house falls down.
My name is Reginald Douay. I live in Millbrae, California. We have some relatives that were affected by Katrina, and everyone was worried what happened to those folks, and we didn't hear from them in over 30 days, so it really started to make me think about, you know, kind of making sure our connection tree is in place, and so I haven't really done that yet, but I'm definitely going to start thinking about doing that now. Absolutely.
My name is Rodney Jenkins. I live in Oakland, California. I live in an African-American neighborhood, which means that earthquake retrofitting is probably far less than it is in comparable white neighborhoods, and thus we have a disaster preparedness plan for our own community to take care of those persons within it.
My name is Stefan Lynch. I'm a nurse. I live in San Francisco. It affects me on a daily basis in that I have to make sure that I'm prepared at home and at work, partly for professional reasons. And I really think about the poor community that I live in, that I work in, the Tenderloin, and how any kind of major disaster is going to affect them.
Prepare Bay Area Director Harris Bostic says since Katrina, the American Red Cross has made a stronger effort to target those communities. The Red Cross offers ongoing training, covering topics from household hazards to CPR and first aid to disaster assistance.
We want to make a concerted effort to focus it on those underserved populations, such as the elderly, the disabled, children, non-native English speakers, and homeless and other people who we've seen in other disasters, such as Katrina. These people are either not thought of or afterthoughts.
Prepare Bay Area is an effort to train 1 million people in a three-step program.
If one person per household can be prepared, having made a plan, built a kit, and gotten trained, then we are far ahead of where the Gulf region was before Katrina hit.
After Katrina hit, Bostic worked in Atlanta with hurricane refugees.
Many people left without anything but the clothes on their backs. No ID, nothing. So I tell people now, a minimum thing you can do when you're making your plan is to photocopy all of your IDs, your driver's license, your passport, your birth certificate, your Social Security card, something simple as that.
That can mean the difference between receiving benefits from the Red Cross, FEMA, and other relief agencies and being denied.
We had to know who they were and were they from the area? And it would have helped if they brought in a photocopy of the driver's license. Now, they can get copies of the driver's license, but that'll take about 30 to 45 days.
Bostic adds that families and friends should determine rendezvous points in case they're separated. And they should create phone trees so that people outside of the danger zone can contact loved ones with updates in case communication lines go down for extended periods.
Because with Katrina, we saw that many people for weeks did not know if another family member was safe or was in harm's way or was alive or dead, and it was really sad. But if you choose one person outside of the region, have everyone call that person, then that person can report.
Bostic says the lessons learned from Katrina, while still painful, have been invaluable for future disaster scenarios on a personal and professional level.
Interagency communication is key. We have organizations such as the Red Cross, which is nonprofit, working with governmental agencies like Homeland Security, the Office of Emergency Services. We're working with the 10 counties of the Bay Area.
And whether they're prepared or not, they will all have to find a way to work together in case of an emergency. This is the audio documentary, A Practical Guide to Disaster. It originally aired on the centennial of the great earthquake and fire that destroyed San Francisco in 1906, the big one. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is a special presentation from KALW News.
After a major earthquake, there's what's called the golden hour.
Historian James D'Alessandro.
What happens to San Francisco and to San Jose in that first 60 minutes will determine their fate.
Basically, the San Francisco Fire Department is the first responder, the lead agency in managing the scene after an earthquake.
That's San Francisco Fire Chief Joanne Hayes White. But, she adds, those first responders may take more time than usual.
Because in the event of a large-scale disaster, our resources will be quickly overwhelmed.
In San Francisco, within 12 hours of an earthquake, trained volunteers would also be available. The San Francisco Fire Department trains neighborhood emergency response teams, called NERT, as part of a plan designed to help individuals understand how to survive for several days after a disaster.
You're going in as a team of five, and you have 20 people that are down and injured. You don't start doing CPR. You do disaster medicine, which is opening up the airway, controlling the bleeding, treating for shock.
Patricia Ewan coordinates NERT, which teaches classes on disaster preparedness in English, Spanish, and Chinese. NERT crews fan out through neighborhoods.
They smell the gas leak. There are people reported missing. They can take out the people if the situation is safe for them. All those little things, because the hospitals may be having be damaged, and they're pulling out people there as well.
Ewan says team leaders will check in directly with San Francisco's 10 battalion stations so that firefighters can respond where they're needed. She says that's critical because of expected communications failures.
Because we expect hundreds of thousands of calls within the first 10 minutes after the disaster. You know, the phone lines may be jammed.
In a large Bay Area earthquake, the reality is you're not going to be able to use your cell phone. You're not going to be able to pick up a telephone and call each other, not right away.
FEMA earthquake specialist Jeff Lusk.
The regional command center would open up. We would contact our federal agency counterparts. We would all come together here in the regional office and start to discuss what possible federal response would be needed to the event.
During Katrina, the nation watched with a feeling of hopelessness as disaster services failed to reach many in need. And many people attempting individual relief efforts were turned away as they neared New Orleans.
One of the things that we're very sensitive to is that we don't become more of a burden on a disaster than we are a benefit. If you are already short of housing and if resources are already scarce, you don't need a bunch of volunteers streaming into an area. They can be more of a burden on the local governments and the local medical system than they are providing aid.
And if there's an ongoing issue in the Bay Area, that's it, housing. The Association of Bay Area Governments found that an earthquake of more than 7.0 magnitude on the Hayward Fault would make more than 150,000 housing units uninhabitable, displacing 330,000 people. FEMA's Jeff Lusk.
The big concern for us in the Bay Area is we have one of the tightest rental markets in the country. There are never a lot of apartments open at any one given time. What are the implications for that if we have 150,000 displaced homes? There aren't 150,000 open apartments right now. So where are these people going to go?
When disaster strikes, the state joins FEMA and the Red Cross to provide emergency housing.
Now, some information we cannot give out before a disaster, like shelters, because first of all, we have shelters identified, but we do not know if those shelters will be standing if it's an earthquake afterwards or not. So we can't say this school, ABC school, is your shelter, and then that school is not there. People panic.
Harris Bostick with the American Red Cross.
The reason why we tell people to have in their kit radios, because we will announce shelter locations and evacuation sites and staging sites over the radios and over other means that are necessary.
The Red Cross plans to be ready to shelter up to 300,000 displaced people. FEMA's Jeff Lusk says the state has been working with FEMA to coordinate long-term arrangements.
And when they identify ways in which they're going to deal with that catastrophic housing issue, we're going to be at the table with them to decide what supplies and what resources we can bring to make that load easier.
FEMA policy is to provide local disaster housing for up to 18 months. But Lusk says no firm plan has been determined to handle that load in the crowded Bay Area. In part, he says, because there are numerous complications to consider.
Moving people in SimCity or in your computer program is pretty easy. Moving it in reality is a whole different ballgame, and I think something that happened with Katrina is we really said to ourselves, maybe some of these assumptions are wrong.
Like the idea of relocating people against their will or bringing people to refugee centers where they might not be safe. Lusk says in the very diverse Bay Area, some of those obstacles are exacerbated.
There are huge issues related to language in the Bay Area that didn't even exist in New Orleans for Katrina. We have many different languages in the Bay Area. We're going to have to get the word out. People are going to have to communicate to us what their needs are. We're going to be able to have to find them.
And communicating with people, many of whom don't speak English, is another unresolved issue. Still another is traffic throughout the nation's second most congested region. Two major thoroughfares in the Bay Area, Interstate 80 north of the Bay Bridge and US 101 south of Candlestick Point, are built on landfill, making them subject to liquefaction.
The transportation disruption in the Bay Area is going to be a huge issue to deal with. Every day when you're driving around the Bay Area, you're driving over literally hundreds and hundreds of small bridges, overpasses, and causeways that are taking you across neighborhoods elevated in the air.
FEMA's Jeff Lusk.
Those are going to require structural engineering inspections before people are going to be allowed to drive back across those. Until those things are looked at, they're going to be closed.
And that leads to another major dilemma facing the Bay Area in case of emergency. Where to go to be safe?
Fire following an earthquake is one of the most major concerns we have. There are no easy answers on how to transport people in the short term locally within an area to be able to deal with those problems.
Part of that is because the city of San Francisco is almost completely surrounded by water, just like the city of New Orleans. So when an earthquake strikes, as when the hurricane landed, residents may have to make do with what they can where they are.
Look at Katrina, look at New Orleans, folks. The cavalry is not coming to get you.
Historian James D'Alessandro.
And forget about 72 hours. You got to be ready for 2 or 3 weeks.
FEMA's Jeff Lusk.
There is one inherent trait that both businesses and people share, and that's that you have to ask yourself one question. What do I need to live through the next 2 weeks if it all stops?
Even with training programs like San Francisco's Neighborhood Emergency Response Teams, Patricia Ewan says the number of people prepared to help overtaxed and underfunded agencies is very low.
We're talking about, I think, 1% or less than 1% on a given daytime that have been trained.
But with awareness increasing in the wake of Katrina and the aftermath of 9/11, those numbers are rising, says San Francisco Fire Chief Joanne Hayes White.
People are, you know, realizing that there is an obligation to be personally prepared. One of the things that we saw in 1906 and again in 89 was the willingness of the public to step up and assist in any way they could.
That happens always in the face of a great emergency.
1906 earthquake survivor Robert Falk.
When we are all in peril, when we have a common reason for association and defense or anything else, we get together.
Can we really say that the lessons have been learned? James D'Alessandro says history works in cycles.
I'm telling you how this is going to happen, and so are hundreds of other people. And it's time to use this centennial to learn something about who we were and who we will be when it happens again, because it will happen again.
A Practical Guide to Disaster was produced by Ben Trefney. Stephen Short was assistant producer. Melanie Young, Art Persico, and Sandra Sutherland provided research assistance. Special thanks to James D'Alessandro and Gladys Hansen for access to archival recordings of eyewitnesses recalling the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire. You can find this audio documentary, links to information about neighborhood emergency response teams, along with other disaster preparedness information at our website, KALW.org. This program was made possible because of your support. We're all in this together. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Holly Kernan.